From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of April, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Dave Chatterton will join us from Strategic Farm Marketing to discuss the agricultural energies. And along the way today, we'll update the latest weekly crop progress numbers from USDA, along with checking in with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the weather forecast for the planting season across the Midwest on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished in Chicago for the day. May corn down 5 cents at 309 and a quarter. July 317 and a quarter, five lower. And December down five at 332. May beans were up four and a quarter. Their settlement price at 830 and three quarters. And July at 840 and three quarters, four and a half higher. August at 842 and a half, up 4 cents. And November beans up two and a quarter at 848. The bean oil for the day at 25.35, 63 cents lower. The bean meal at 289.10, up 350. Wheat futures, the May contract down two, 546 and three quarters the settlement price. July at 546 and a quarter, one and a quarter higher. That's for the hard red. The soft red, or rather, that was for the soft red. The hard red, July at 504, a penny and three quarters higher. And live cattle futures down a buck 92 and a half at 91.60 in the lead April. The April feeder cattle for the day settled 42 and a half cents lower at 117.90, and lean hogs up $3.67 and a half cents at $44.27 and a half cents on the afternoon. The energies trading crude oil now in that lead May, which is an expiration, up 47 bucks after going way negative yesterday. It's at $9.81 a barrel. The July is trading at $18.32, down $7.94. Ethanol futures 3 7/10 lower in the heating oil. 72 and a half cents a gallon. That's diesel fuel. Up 16 2/10 cents lower, and gasoline down 15 9/10 cents at 50 8/10 cents per gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off around 400 points at around 23,000, and the U.S. dollar is up 0.332 at 100.39 for the afternoon. We're joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne. I hope you're doing better today than yesterday watching the crude oil.
I'll tell you what, that was something. I've never seen it before. I've never seen anything trade a negative price before on any of the board markets here that way. So it was sure a new lesson for us to learn, and I'm glad I didn't have too many people trading crude oil yesterday.
Indeed. Tell me about today's market for the grains. It looks like soybeans staged a pretty good rally towards the end of the day.
Yeah, it they went down. Of course, corn actually did a good rally, too. The May went down and touched the 16 low at 301, and we basically saw a little rebound there. We went down and tested some support in the beans, come back, and charged on up here. Not 100% sure why the beans felt good. They were under pressure early because of the bean oil not looking very good, along with the crude oil and any blending that way as far as the soy diesel. And also just thinking that everything was the deflationary because of some technical reasons there, and we'll see if it can hold come tomorrow.
And what are your expectations for producers to be in the field this week?
Well, I think, we talked to a lot of them out there today. They say that actually it's pretty dry out there. Some of them are planting corn, some of them are planting beans, but they're all saying it's windy and it's dry. So we look for a lot of progress to be made here over the next couple of days as far as planting, at least in our area.
Tell me about ethanol in your area.
Ethanol. Linden is shut down. Lafayette's shut down. They're making hand sanitizer with what they have left up there. Basically, when crude oil gets down to this, it's about 60 cents a gallon higher than it needs to. Need to see ethanol plants being shut down here until we get this glut and the crude oil can work back up a little bit, Todd. Not a very good thing for the corn outlook as we look at things here, because, you know, about a third of our corn usage has been into ethanol. So not a good thing. The meal looks a little better because we don't have DDGs, but as far as the ethanol, it looks like we're going to continue to see close down, so more ethanol plants.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Bye.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist, is here to discuss his latest article on the FarmDoc Daily website. It's on the soybean crush, which Todd has been really good. You've written about this. What's your point?
Well, I mean, we did see really strong crush numbers in February and March, which is one of the few bright spots for soybean use this year so far. We've seen exports continue to disappoint, and that looks like it's going to continue into the near future. My worry for soybean crush is basically the disruptions to the meat supply chain we've seen, not just here, but around the world, could blunt further expansion in crush totals in 2020. And there's an expectation, and USDA came out in the last report and raised crush by 20 million bushels to 2.125 billion bushels. And a lot of that assumption was on stronger meal exports and stronger domestic use of meal. And, you know, as we look at crush, like here in Illinois around Decatur, we've seen meal prices fall from around $326 per ton in the last week of March to around $293 a ton this morning. And while the soybean price is going down, it does contract crush margins a little bit. And, you know, with all the livestock being backed up, maybe people not putting hogs or cattle in place for the next few months, it might really reduce domestic meal consumption. And I have a real concern about Southeast Asia in particular, places like the Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam, and how this global basically contraction is going to affect meat demand in those areas and what that'll do to soybean meal exports, because the Philippines are a major soybean meal buyer from the U.S. On the good side for us, and export-wise, Argentina is having all kinds of issues. I hate to say it's a good thing, but they have issues moving their meal and oil out of the country right now. Their crop's a little bit smaller than a lot of people expected. They've implemented export taxes, but even with all those issues, USDA is still forecasting, and I still expect them to do about similar meal exports to what they did last year. So really, it's coming down to, for us, will we see domestic meal consumption pick up or stay at the pace it has been recently under all these disruptions to the livestock supply chain? And will we see our meal exports accelerate because we're actually behind the pace to meet their current projection? And I'm not 100% confident that's going to happen. I would like for it to happen, but I'm not sure we're going to see this another expansion that crush forecast anytime soon. I'm afraid we might lose some bushels to crush as we move through 2020.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check the weekly crop progress report as released by USDA. It says as of Sunday, 7% of the corn crop was in the ground, 9% is the rolling five-year average, 2% of the soybeans have been planted. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, 1% is the rolling five-year average, 14% of the winter wheat has actually headed. That compares to the five-year average of 15%, and it's said to be in 50% good and 7% excellent condition. Last week, those numbers were 53% good and 9% excellent. Now, let's check in on state conditions across the Midwest.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Regional Field Office with the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending April 20th, 2020. Rain and snow limited Iowa farmers to 2.9 days suitable for field work during the week ending April 19, 2020, according to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Services. Areas of southern Iowa saw a foot of snow late Thursday, April 16th, through the morning of Friday, April 17th. Where possible, field activities for the week included planting, applying anhydrous and dry fertilizer, spreading manure, and tilling fields. In spite of less than ideal conditions, 2% of Iowa's corn crop has been planted, almost 1 week behind the five-year average. Half of Iowa's expected oat crop has been planted. 3 days ahead of last year, but 1 day behind average. 6% of the oat crop has emerged 5 days behind average. Livestock producers in southern Iowa reported calving issues due to the snowfall and colder temperatures. For the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. I am reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, April 19. Last week was cold and dry across Illinois, with significant snow over much of the state late in the week. Before the cold snap, farmers made some progress on field work, including planting, fertilizing, spraying, and tilling fields. Colder temperatures ended late in the week, and many farmers were able to return to field work on Sunday. There was an average of 4.1 days suitable for field work around the state last week. Average precipitation around Illinois last week was 0.6 of an inch, and that was 1/3 of an inch below normal. Temperatures averaged only 41 degrees and ranged from 12 to 14 degrees below average around the state. Soil temperatures on Sunday ranged from the mid-40s in northern Illinois to the lower 50s in southern parts of the state. Corn planting was reported as 8% finished compared to 1% 1 year ago and the 5-year average of 11%. Soybean planting was reported as 2% finished. The winter wheat crop is now 2% headed compared to 2% 1 year ago and 4% normally. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 4% very poor, 5 poor, 23 fair, 47 good, and 21% excellent. That is better than last week and also better than 1 year ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending April 19, 2020. Precipitation, snowmelt, and saturated soils continued to limit field activities in Minnesota, with 2.0 days suitable for field work statewide during the week. Livestock producers reported greening pastures, calving, and manure hauling. Other field activities for the week were fertilizer and manure application, rock picking, as well as vegetable and oat planting. Barley was 2% planted compared to the 5-year average of 14%. 10% of the expected oat crop had been planted, 1 week ahead of last year, but 6 days behind the 5-year average. Potatoes were 3% planted compared to the average of 11%. Sugar beets were 2% planted compared to the 29% average. And scattered corn and spring wheat planting were reported. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Corn Belt. On this Tuesday afternoon, we're now joined by Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, farmers are really anxious and ready to roll across the Corn Belt. Actually, I think probably a few of them are getting started or really about to, given whatever the moisture levels happen to be in their soils. What can you tell me about the next 10 days or so?
Well, we're going to need to exercise some patience. The recent spell of really chilly weather is going to ease a little bit. The focus of the colder than average temperatures will be more towards the Great Lakes, New England, and the northeastern United States. But it's going to be a slow process. It's going to be a week to 10 days before we get our temperatures back to normal. The warmer weather will develop first in the western and northwest Corn Belt, and we'll see some of that early to the middle parts of next week. But until then, it's going to be a little cooler than normal, and we're also, in the next 10 days, going to see some fairly good chances for precipitation, especially in the central, eastern, and southern Corn Belt areas. Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, southern Iowa, those areas look to be the wettest.
And how about Iowa, the Dakotas, and Minnesota?
There's going to be precipitation up there, but it looks like the heavier precipitation will be along and south of I-80. I think that's the dividing line between the heavier moisture and the more moderate moisture to the north and west of those areas. But those wet areas of the northwestern Corn Belt still will get some precipitation, but it doesn't look to be as heavy as those central and southern areas.
As we get to the end part of April here, the last 10 days and moving into May, many places are past the last frost days, though it was pretty cold in parts of April. Do you have concerns still?
I do, at least here for the next week or so. There's a lot of cold air still, although I think fortunately the bullseye of the cold over the next 10 to 14 days will be more towards the eastern Great Lakes and the northeastern United States. So I think there will be some reason to relax a little bit on some of this cold, but we got to get between now and the weekend, we got to get through the next 5 or 6 days here before it does get a little bit warmer.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Well, let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. We're now joined by Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Hey, thanks, Dave, for being with us. What a wild couple of days it has been. We'll talk about the agricultural energies and shutting down plants and such, but man, crude oil. With the negatives yesterday and overnight on Sunday starting down, and even today, a lower crude oil market. What did you make of it all, and what does it mean, if anything?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, definitely seatbelt required here in the oil complex this week. And, you know, we talked, kind of ad nauseum in the last couple of weeks about what's going on in the U.S. biofuels industry and with ethanol and the shutdowns. And I guess that's going to pale in comparison to what we've seen this week, kind of an historic week here. We saw, WTI crude oil, the lead month contract was in delivery starting yesterday and, goes off the board here this afternoon on Tuesday. And because of that, there are no limits on those particular futures contracts. And we saw a very wild ride yesterday where effectively the contract holders in the crude oil who were still long and were either going to be forced to buy back their cover their contracts or make delivery. There was no storage available for them to make delivery. There is some storage space still available, but not at Cushing. And most of what is there, what's available commercially, has been spoken for or already allocated. And so it became a very big panic situation and a train wreck. We had over a $58 range in that lead crude oil contract. It traded negative $40 per barrel at one point, again, which we had never seen. It's trading, closer to about $8 here today as we talk. So it's been a very volatile ride here. And I think when you ask, what does it mean? I think at the end of the day, yesterday we kind of sat back and watched the action. Everybody was a little shell-shocked. Today we're getting a much deeper reaction where the June and the forward month contracts in crude oil are down, almost $10 a barrel. We're down 14, 15 cents in refined fuels. And what we've done is set a tone here of deflation going forward that is crossing really all of our commodity markets. We saw it influence the grains, the meats, our agricultural markets early in the day, and it has a host of ramifications, I think, from an economic standpoint moving forward here.
What we saw was somewhat separate. It was a storage issue. People got caught, and then because they were in expiration, it just chased it through the bottom side and into negatives. And now you're telling me that because we're down $9 to $10 in the June and the July contracts, that this is settling out as a potential deflationary problem for all of the commodities?
Well, I think crude oil is, when you talk about the commodity complex in general, or if you look at the weightings of some of the index funds who are big players in our marketplace, they're heavily weighted into that oil complex. Now, the value of oil coming down means that weighting is coming down as well, just by definition. But I think what we see here is a situation that maybe is a precursor to some others, and the fact that, that kind of volatility on an expiring contract has to be seen for what it is. It is an expiring contract. There's very little volume there. There's very little open interest compared to the back end of the market. But when you put that in the context of storage is full and production is not slowing quick enough to adjust to that, we get these kind of price, dislocations and the kind of volatility that we've seen. And I'm not saying that could happen for ethanol. I'm not saying that could happen in other markets, but I think it's a warning shot across the bow that speculative longs and money managers on a global basis or big money managers look at and say, ooh, do I understand this? Is this something I want to be a part of? Is this kind of volatility, tenable for me to have funds, deployed in that type of a sense? And there's many workarounds for that, such as not staying, in the front contract, that close to expiration and things that have always been done. But it did shake the apple tree a little bit here.
On the other side of this coin, you have ethanol, biodiesel. How much capacity do we believe has it been idle? Do you know a number at this point for production of ethanol? And what might that mean?
Well, you know, at this point, we're looking at ethanol production being off something like around that 40% mark, somewhere between 37 and 40, depending on how you do your math. In the U.S. right now, we've got something on the tenor of around 77 ethanol plants that have closed down. We have about another 70 that have been idled. And that's out of a total, I think, of we had 157 or 58 on the, you know, as far as working plants going right now. So certainly ethanol seems to have done a pretty good job of making a quicker adjustment. And I think that that hand got forced by the fact that there's not nearly the amount of available either commercial or private storage for ethanol as a byproduct that there is for petroleum. And keep in mind, Todd, you know, ethanol is not fungible into a petroleum storage system. So in other words, those have to be two totally separate systems. And you know, similar to maybe like propane, which we might talk about here today as well, it's a separate little universe as opposed to some of the things that we see in the crude oil and the refined fuel market. Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned propane and ethanol is kind of a dismal thing to talk about as it relates to the corn market, what's happening in propane?
Well, propane's been an interesting market as well. I mean, we've actually seen a little bit of a rebound in prices. And Conway, which is the regional hub for the Midwest here, got as low as 22 cents back really kind of right before, you know, right after the COVID thing started to break. We're now up to about 36 cents. So the market kind of went down and, you know, and had the same decline and is now back on the way up. And it's really a situation where because it's a smaller universe, as we talked about, the stopping of production and the shut-ins and the anticipation of more of that to come has really got to an issue where there's not an issue with product going into storage. As a matter of fact, we came out of March with record propane storage, but it looks like now we could start to draw down on those inventories as the available supply gets shut in or gets reduced. And in doing so, we could have a contra-seasonal move where the propane inventories, which typically build over the summer, could actually be coming down a little bit. That's contra-seasonal to what we would normally look for. And in doing so, I don't think it's a runaway up market by any means, but it's been a very interesting to see propane prices actually gravitating a bit higher here while we've seen, you know, the diesel fuel, the ethanol, the other refined fuels come down.
Anything you want producers to do at this point about locking in fuel prices?
Well, I think you certainly have to take a look. We've seen red diesel, you know, delivered on farm and transport loads, you know, in the lower to mid 80s here. And probably certainly cheaper after today's move. We've seen propane again, you know, down in the areas that have been the previous lows. So if you have the ability to contract or fill storage, I think you need to be looking at that. Do you have to be overly aggressive? Probably not. I think the petroleum situation takes, you know, 30 to 60, maybe 90 days to kind of sort itself out here where we've got a little bit of time. But if you weigh the downside potential here versus the upside potential, longer term, especially if we're talking about fall and maybe even into next spring, you would have to think that upside potential is greater, and it's something that you definitely want to be paying attention to. I'd be more aggressive here in terms of locking in propane than I would be diesel fuel ton.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is for Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois. He joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Just click and play right out of the website. Now, you're probably in the field this week and for a while now. Why not hook your Bluetooth up and try us as a podcast? You can click and play out of the website or look for us in NPR One, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, as well as the Apple Podcast. Whatever your favorite application for playing a podcast might be, we're likely to be there. Just search for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, even the Opening Market Report. I'm Extensions. Todd Gleason.